Wednesday, March 15th, 2023. It is 8:35 in the morning, and we are in the Minnesota Education Finance Committee hearing. Today we have just one bill, one big juicy bill, and it is the governor's policy, no, finance bill? Yes, finance bill. We're in finance. And so members, we're going to go through this bill. It's a pretty comprehensive, lots of information in here about how the governor thinks we ought to finance education. I'm going to ask you to keep your questions till the end. So members, as we go through, you can take notes on your packet. I also want to remind you at the end of today, please save your packet. We're going to be needing it again, and I don't want to have to reprint this 400 and some page bill. So with that, I think we are ready, and we have our MDE folks here to walk us through. And so whoever is going to begin, would you please state your name for the record, and you may begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity for MDE to come again before the Senate Education Committee and have the chance today to share with you a little bit more about the governor's budget bill. My name is Stephanie Graff. I'm Chief of Staff for the Minnesota Department of Education. As you all know, the governor and lieutenant governor's education vision is really laid out in the Due North Education Plan. This plan is centered on ensuring every single child in Minnesota ensures that we have a high-quality education, no matter their race or their zip code. We really believe, and you've heard us say, that with this historic surplus, we have the opportunity to truly transform Minnesota's public education system and delivering the opportunities that our students so desperately deserve. As you know, and we'll do a deep dive, the governor proposes $6.9 billion to fund a range of initiatives that you'll hear about today. You'll hear about initiatives really focused on improving academic outcomes, focused on early childhood education and making sure our youngest learners have a great start, focus on access to student and family opportunities for engagement, making sure that we're meeting the mental health needs of our students, making sure that we're providing American Indian education in the way that we absolutely need to for our American Indian students and for all students, creating a more welcoming teaching and learning environment and making sure that students have the opportunity to have a safe and nurturing environment as they go to school every single day with their educators in the classroom. Reimagining the secondary experience and making sure that our students in secondary schools have the opportunities to really make sure that there are hands-on learning and experiential learning and opportunities that are going to prepare them for career, college, and future success in life. Supporting the educator workforce, particularly making sure that we have educators in front of our students that represent the true diversity of the students that we serve, and that we're also really leaning in and addressing some of the workforce shortages that we know exist across the state. And increasing our agency capacity so that MDE can continue to lead and deliver on supporting our public education system across the state. I'm really pleased to be able to hand the mics over to our Director of School Finance, Kathy Erickson, as well as our Director of Government Relations, Adosh Uni. And with that, I will hand it over to, I believe, Kathy.
Thank you so much, Ms. Graff. And Ms. Erickson, if you would state your full name for the record, and you may begin.
Thank you. My name is Kathy Erickson, and I'm the Director of School Finance for the Minnesota Department of Education. Madam Chair and members, I'll be going over Article 1 of Senate File 2684, and then turning it over to Adosh for other articles. Article 1, General Education, Sections 1, 2, and 6 relate to the public education for online opportunities for the Bureau of Indian Education Schools, or BIE schools. This access would just shift the opportunities for these students in BIE schools to be able to take online courses and have those funds shift from that in school time to an online school time. So the fiscal impact is minor, just $6,000 in each biennium. In Section 3 of Article 1, we talk about English learner. So the EL revenue is going to include early childhood special education students. So this is just correcting some unintended consequences from language that was not included in prior legislation. So what this would do would be to allow students who qualify for early childhood special education, or ECSE, to qualify, who are in voluntary pre-K or the School Readiness Plus programs, to qualify for EL services because they're currently not generating that revenue, and would also let them qualify for free breakfast. So this is more of a opportunity to correct resources for our early learner special education students, and the cost for the first biennium would be approximately $1.3 million. In sections 4, 5, 8, 11, and 12 of the Article 1 talks about our concentrations and revenues for English learner or EL students. So the increases in need for English learner have become identified by both district submissions in the expenditures that they have related to the the revenues that have been available for school districts up until now. So by seeing those increased gaps, the governor is recommending that we increase the amount of that base per pupil from $704 per pupil to $755 a pupil over the 20 student base. That's a guarantee. We also then increase the concentration allowances for students from 11.5% to 16.8%. So that will also allow for additional revenue. And then there will be also an increase for those districts who have a higher concentration above the 16.8%. And overall, this proposal would increase English learner revenue by approximately 25%. Section 7 talks about the increase in the basic allowance, or the formula allowance, also sometimes called the basic formula. The governor is proposing a 4% increase in fiscal year 24 that would increase the annual amount to $7,100 and $7,138. And then in fiscal year 25, an additional 2%, which would get us to $7,281. The first year in 24 would be approximately $275 per pupil. This would then also increase for the biennium the amount that we would be putting into the basic formula allowance by just shy of $719 million. The historic process for the basic allowance has been an average of 2% over the past several years, except for this current year, which was 2.45%. So we've just seen an average increase in past years of 2%. So moving from 4% and 2%. In fiscal years 26 and 27, the governor proposes moving to the inflation rate, or the CPI. And again, those are being projected at 1.97% for fiscal year 26 and 2.17% for fiscal year 27 and ongoing. This does have a cap of 3% each year for the CPI. The CPI is also identified to be chosen for the January prior to the fiscal year starting. So that allows school districts who begin the budgeting process in January or in those early months before the fiscal year starts to have a better sense of what that amount might be for budgeting. Section 9 relates to the governor's proposal to increase or to change the amount of compensatory requirements to be spent at the site from 50% under current law to 80%, and the language just says no more than 20%. So this would just be moving that amount of compensatory revenue to stay and be spent at the site where it is generated. Section 10, the governor proposes that school boards may be allowed to renew an expiring referendum by board action if the renewal is the same amount and the same duration, with a board adopting a written authorizing resolution and submitting that to the Department of Education. It would also require public testimony for that renewal. This would mean that for school districts, referendums expiring at the end of fiscal year 24, which would be the upcoming fiscal year, would have to be notified by this fall for the levy limitation and certification process to then put that renewal on for the fiscal year 25 school year. And that's all I had for Article 1.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Mr. Uni, you're next.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. One thing I wanted to add to Chief of Staff Graf's comments earlier is that we have several other leadership staff here joining us to help answer questions when they arise at the end. So I just wanted to point that out so that team knows they're on hand to answer those questions should they arise. I'm going to start with Article 2, Education Excellence. Sections 1 and 2 focus on competency-based education proposal, which expands competency or standards-based approach to education using evidence-based models that focus on what students know and are able to do, rather than the traditional A to F model. Funds will be used for professional development of staff, family engagement, and increasing the Minnesota Department of Education's capacity to implement this proposal. And just one thing I want to note is that if you have your change MMB change item books, there are background materials for each of the proposals on there that are associated with them. So this proposal, I'll note where the proposals are in the change item book, just so you can refer back if you have those up. Those are available online as well. I'm not sure if you have physical copies, but that would be on page 93 of the change item book. Section 3 of Article 2 relates to the bold literacy birth to grade 12 action plan to improve literacy outcomes. This is on page 50 of the budget book. This relates specifically in the statutes to amending the reading proficiency no later than the end of third grade. This would include changes to the literacy goal, identification, intervention, parental involvement, staff development, local literacy plans, and commissioner duties. As you can tell, it's a comprehensive rewrite of the literacy statute in Minnesota for a comprehensive approach to improving our literacy outcomes.
Mr. Uni, would you just, when you are referring to different articles or different areas, would do you mind telling us the page number and perhaps even just so that we can all stay on the same page? Are you able to do, is that, so? Oh, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, I will do that. I will make sure I can do that. I can juggle two things, especially since the reviser has handy dandy points at the bottom of the page, so it shouldn't be too hard, Madam Chair.
Excellent, thank you.
So the section that I just covered, the bold literacy plan, Article 2, Section 3, starts on page 12, line 11, and that I believe goes for several pages. As I mentioned, it was a comprehensive rewrite of the statute. So that goes until the bottom of page 18. The next section is section 4 of Article 2. This is around our COMPASS program, or multi-tiered systems of support. This establishes COMPASS, and this is on the bottom of page 18, starting at 18.30. And this would be going through the bottom of page 19. This establishes COMPASS as the state improvement, school improvement model to deliver student supports, again, within a multi-tiered systems of support model, or MTSS. MTSS framework provides the supports for ensuring positive social, emotional, behavioral, developmental, and academic outcomes for every student. This lays out expectations for district infrastructure, family engagement, culturally and linguistically responsive instruction and support, assessment tools, and database decision making. If you're following along on your change item book, it's page 89 for background information. Section 5, starting on line 19.27, it relates again to the bold literacy plan. This covers modifications to the statute on reading instruction associated with the bold literacy plan to improve evidence-based reading instruction occurring within an MTSS framework, provides or amends definitions, and requires MDE to provide implementation guidance for districts. Section 6 starts on, bear with me, starts on page 22, line 12. This would allow MDE to spend fees collected through the online learning program administration. Currently, we collected fees for the online learning approval process, but did not have the capability of spending them. It's not an extremely large amount, but these fees would then be able to be spent, but we retain them. These fees would be able to be spent on continuous improvement activities. Just as a note, in the policy, the governor's policy bill, we are planning to, or we are proposing to move from a approval process for online instruction to considering online instruction as a learning modality, so that all districts and charters would essentially be approved automatically to provide this modality. We move to a continuous improvement process. We would retain the approval process for supplemental online learning providers. That means districts and charters that are providing online learning instruction to students that are not their enrolled, whether residential or open enrolled students. Online instruction would move to a continuous improvement process, not an approved process for the provision of online instruction for students who are enrolled with that district. So this is around a, back to this item, this is around being able to spend funds with the the program, the approval process that we have had in place up until now. Section 7, which starts on 23, line 19, relates to full-service community schools. This clarifies the statute related to full-service community schools by adding to the definitions, acknowledging that intermediate school districts can have the model, planning and implementation grant parameters, needs assessment, program planning, program plans, and review of reports. And if you're in your budget book, this is on page 138. Section 8, which starts on page 31, line 24, this relates to a clarification of the American Indian education programs that they must meet the unique and cultural needs of American Indian people, and accountability factors are met before others can participate in programs that are funded by American Indian Education Aid. And to receive the aid, the districts must have a plan. This is on budget book, page 47. Section 9 is on page 32, line 4. This is the increase to American Indian Education Aid base funding and allows cooperatives to receive the funding. This would come at roughly $13.5 million in the first biennium and slightly over $15 million in the second biennium. Section 10 starts on page 34, right at the top, line 1. This relates to student support personnel. This is funding directly for students to hire student support personnel in charters and districts at the greater of $22 times the number of pupils enrolled, or $35,000. And then there is funding for intermediates and cooperatives at $6 times the number of students enrolled by member districts. And just as a reminder, this is to hire student support personnel who are licensed to serve as a school counselor, school psychologist, school social worker, school nurse, or chemical dependency counselor in Minnesota. This would come, the proposal is funded at $48.5 million in the first biennium and roughly $49.8 million in the second biennium. Section 11 relates to the modification of literacy incentive aid. This is at the top of page 36.1. This is related to the bold literacy plan. This modifies the use of literacy incentive aid to require training in evidence-based reading instruction, hiring a reading and dyslexia specialist, and hiring literacy coaches for the most underperforming schools. And this would be located on page 50 of your budget book. And section 12, which is on 36.20, is the appropriations section, Madam Chair, for the article. I'm just gonna focus on the appropriations related to the newer proposals. There's a range of other appropriations, as is commonplace in this bill, that are just associated with ongoing funding, not related to any of the proposals within the governor's budget. First one is on subdivision 24, which is on page 42.22. This is the Align the Youth Apprenticeship Programs, which you can find further information on budget book page 107. This is at a one-time funding amount of $100,000 in fiscal year 24. Subdivision 25, which starts at line 42.28. This is for Compass and MTSS, or multi-tiered systems of support. The total funding amount is roughly about $39.4 million in the first biennium and about $18.9 million in the second biennium. And the breakdown of these costs that you'll see across page 43, mostly across page 43, is $12.9 million to MDE for capacity and implementation supports, $5 million each year for grants to districts and charters to implement MTSS, $5.25 million each year to develop regional networks focusing on math instruction, $2 million each year to the Barr Center to provide services to grantees under this program, and $1 million each year to the University of Minnesota Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement for implementation and evaluation of performance under this program. And then further in this section establishes a range of supports to grantees under this program, such as partnering with co-ops to implement the Compass program, streamlining reports to MDE through the One Plan, and implementation resources. And this is on page 89 of the budget book. Subdivision 26, which is on line 44.17, is computer science education. This is for creating a state plan for increasing computer science instruction in the state. It's at $773,000 in the first biennium and $463,000 in the second biennium. Subdivision 27, which is on 44.26, funds competency-based education. This is a one-time funding amount. These are funds for planning grants to develop criteria for personalized competency-based education, and that's roughly $31 million of one-time funding. And I'll just note that almost all, if not all, of the one-time funding amounts are available for 4 years, so 24, 25, 26, and 27. And that goes not just for this item, but for all the items we'll be discussing today. Subdivision 28, which starts on 45.23, that is rigorous coursework expansion. This is one-time funding of $6 million. This is funding is used for increasing access to underserved students to take courses in AP, IB, career and technical education, PSEO, concurrent enrollment. Funds can be used for student recruitment, teacher training, transportation to get to the courses if they're PSEO, expanding offerings, and increased supports for enrolling in early and middle college. Subdivision 29 is expanding access, student access to career and technical education. This is a one-time amount of roughly $28.79 million. The vast majority of it, $26.2 million, is for grants to charters and districts to grow CTE programs. Funds can be used for teacher development, student development, equipment, and curriculum development and purchasing. $2.5 million is for statewide mentoring supports, and this is on budget book 104. My apologies, the prior one, rigorous coursework expansion, if you're looking along, is on page 96. The next item on subdivision 30 is on line 46.21. This is one-time funds of roughly $13.8 million, again, for full-service community schools, and this is on budget book page 138. The next item is subdivision 31. This is on page 46.28, culturally relevant practices grants. These funds, this is about $31 million one time. Funds can be used to coordinate and train peers on culturally relevant practices, training and coaching, and increased capacity to partner with community experts. This is on page 181, and this is associated with the funding out of the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center. On subdivision 32, this is funding associated with the Minnesota Bold Literacy Proposal. This is on line 47.10 is where it starts. The funding is $65.8 million per biennium. And the breakdown is $18 million per year for regional literacy networks focused on implementation of comprehensive literacy reform, $9.2 million in fiscal year 24, and then $9 million annually thereafter for a contract to develop statewide training based on structured literacy to offer for free, to be offered for free, $1 million annually for partnerships with higher education institutions to create literacy labs as training grounds for teacher candidates, $4.8 million per year for community partnerships to maintain and expand literacy-related efforts across Minnesota. And the further breakdown of this $4.8 million per year is $1 million for state library services to expand work on early literacy development in libraries, including training staff. $1 million to the U of M Carey Center for to provide statewide evaluation. $1 million to Reading Corps to expand Bridge to Reach resources. And $1.8 million to the Jewish Community Relations Council and the Parent Child Plus program to maintain programming. This is on budget book, page 50 again. Subdivision 33 starts on line 48.14. This is for Native Language Revitalization Grants to offer language instruction in Dakota and Anishinaabe languages or another language indigenous to the U.S. or Canada. Funds can be used on costs for teachers, program supplies, and curricular resources, and this will be funded at $14.234 million dollars per biennium. And this is on budget book page 79. Subdivision 34.
I'm sorry, Mr. Uni, what page in the budget book?
Page 79.
79, thank
you. On page 48.24, this is the pilot to fully fund post-secondary enrollment options. This is another one-time funding proposal of roughly $47.9 million. These funds will be used to provide districts and charters an amount equal up to 88% of average daily membership for students taking PSEO courses, again, as a pilot on the pathway towards fully funding this program. And this is on budget book page 101. Subdivision 35 on line 49.4 of the bill is the funding subdivision for student support personnel aid. Again, that's $48.5 million in the first biennium and $49.8 million in the second biennium, and that's on budget book page 39. Associated with that on subdivision 36, which is line 49.10, we have the other two components of that package, which is the Student Support Personnel Workforce Development Initiative, which includes funding for workforce diversification, relicensure, and respecialization activities, and then building out MDE capacity. This package comes at $5.1 million per biennium, with the vast majority of it going at $2.4 million per year for the Workforce Development Initiative. And this is on budget book, page 39. On subdivision 37, which is at line 49.21, this is the Student Voices model. This is a one-time funding amount of $7.6 million, roughly, and this is a small amount to the Minnesota Youth Council for stipends, engagement, hiring, and hiring facilitators. And then the remaining funds would be grants to organizations including charters and districts, tribal nations, community orgs, cooperatives, all to build youth engagement capacity and support community partnerships between youth groups and these community partnerships. And this would be on budget book page 142, named Student Voice Models. And the final subdivision that I'm going to cover in this article is subdivision 38, and this is alternatives to exclusionary discipline. And this is at $10 million per biennium, and this is associated with funds for districts and charters to, I'm sorry, and this is on line 50.7. This is associated with many of the policy proposals in the governor's bill around looking at practices to reduce non-exclusionary discipline or increase non-exclusionary discipline. We're looking at alternatives to exclusionary discipline. And so this would be funds to districts to help implement these policies. This would help fund training and coaching opportunities for school staff, implementing anti-bias and trauma-informed practices, employing alternatives to exclusionary discipline practices, hiring additional staff, and conducting monitoring and evaluation activities. And Madam Chair, that concludes Article 2.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, what page was that you were just talking about? I missed it.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Farnsworth, this subdivision starts on line 50.7 of the bill, and then on the budget book, if you're following along there, that's page 42 where that's described. And then the policy proposal, Senator, that I was talking about is carried in the policy bill. Madam Chair, that concludes Article 2, and I'm pleased to announce that we're roughly halfway through the bill.
Moving right along.
Madam Chair, committee members, Article 3 focuses on teacher supports. Section 1, which is on line 50.27, is associated with the development and implementation of American Indian history and culture training required for teacher licensure. This will create a new re-licensure requirement specific to American Indian history and culture. This is a no-cost item, and this is on budget book page 77. Section 2 is on line 51.3. This is updating the aid entitlement statute for QCOMP, and this is associated with the proposal around targeted mixed delivery early learning model, which you'll hear about later. And that whole package is covered in budget book page 23. Section 3 is on line 51.27. This creates a special revenue account for the Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program, or MITTP, and allows up to $75,000 annually for administration costs. This is on budget book page 74. Section 4, which is on line 52.9, is associated with the Grow Your Own program. My apologies, I've lost my page. Section 4, this clarifies charter schools and co-ops are eligible for Grow Your Own grants. Also, that grant funds may be expended on teacher licensure exams and licensure fees, and provides that programs are eligible for the adult pathway and concurrent enrollment is eligible for the student pathway. The Grow Your Own expansion proposal is on budget book page 56. Section 5 is also associated with Grow Your Own, and that starts on line 52.26. Yes. And this clarifies language for Grow Your Own grants for programs serving secondary students around courses encouraging students to pursue teaching pathways. Again, budget book page 56. Section 6 is on line 53.24. This increases the department's administrative costs upward adjustment to account for the increase of funding for the Grow Your Own program overall. Again, budget page, budget book page 56 for Grow Your Own. Section 7-8 establishes the Grow Your Own programs for early childhood educators and for teacher licensure shortage areas. This includes language on program parameters, grant procedure, department administration, and establishes a special revenue account. Finally, requires reporting to the commissioner. And my apologies, that's on line, section 7 is on line 54.3, and section 8 starts on 55.25, and you can see that this is all new language. Section 9 is a different program. It's paid student teaching proposal. This starts on line 57.16. This establishes a paid student teaching program to be developed by the commissioner. This is for teacher candidates who are completing field-specific student teaching requirements of approved teacher prep programs approved by the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, or PELSB. Minnesota districts and charters are required to provide student teaching stipends that must be reimbursed. And this is on budget book page 61. And I'll just note for the funding proposals here, sometimes I'm noting them in the body of the article, how much they were proposing, and sometimes I'm noting the proposal amounts in the appropriation section. So If I don't note the cost here with the proposal, I will be noting it when we get to the appropriation section. So I appreciate your patience there. Section 10 is the appropriation section. How timely. The first item is subdivision 3, grow your own appropriations. Overall, the proposal is $35 million in new funding for this program per year. The program currently has funding for the core program, so this would be in addition to the current funding. Again, $35 million per biennium. That breaks down to $6 million, and my apologies, that's on line, starting on line 58.13, and this is, again, on page 56 of the budget book. $6 million per year to expand programs focused on teacher diversity, the core program that the Grow Your Own started out with. This increases the program overall to $12.5 million per year. There's $1.5 million annually for early childhood educator programs. And then there's $10 million annually for Grow Your Own shortage areas. This is, breaks down as funding to teacher prep programs, prep providers offering special education licensure programs to assist currently employed Tier 1 and 2 teachers getting their Tier 3 licenses. This is associated with a memo from the feds, from OSEP, around the requirements they feel that educators who are working with students receiving special education services need to have, and the directive that Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers do not have the appropriate qualifications to continue on. So this is funding directly for all of the educators with that tiered licensure that we've identified in the state working with students receiving special education services to receive that training to get trained up to Tier 3 licensure. And then there's also, in that $10 million annually for this program for shortage areas, there's also grants for licensure pathways for shortage areas and to reduce licensure costs. And again, this whole package for Grow Your Own is in page 56 of the budget book. Subdivision 7 is on line 59.14. This is the MITTP, or Minnesota Indian Teacher Training Program grants. This is a one-time increase to the program at $2.8 million in fiscal 24. My apologies, $2.2 million in fiscal 24 and $600,000 in fiscal 25. Subdivision 9, which is on line 59.28, is for early childhood teacher shortage. This is grants to higher education institutions to provide tuition and other supports. This is $956,000 in the first biennium and $1.37 million in the second biennium, and this is on budget book page 63. Subdivision 10 is on page 60.4. This is funding the educator career pathway. This is one-time funding of $6.6 million in the first biennium. This is grants to, across the two bienniums, the funding would be put out in fiscal 24. This would be grants to charters and districts to encourage students to become educators with a focus on recruiting disadvantaged and underrepresented students in these career pathways. A little bit over $5 million would be grants to districts and charters to establish these pathways, and then $1.6 million would be for charters and districts to establish tuition incentives for high school teachers to obtain concurrent enrollment credentials. Just as a reminder for the committee, educators in high school settings have to have a certain amount of higher education credits to be qualified to teach these concurrent enrollment courses. I believe it's, 18 credits worth. I think for people who've been around for a little bit, we had a little bit of a kerfuffle in 2017, 18 with the Higher Learning Commission about having the right number of educators having the right number of post-secondary credits to be able to teach these courses. And so we're investing some resources to ensure that we have supports in that space. Subdivision 11 is on page 60.27, and this is associated with paid student teaching. This will be at $29.33 million per biennium. Subdivision 12 is the funding for statewide teacher mentoring program. This is one time at $9.4 million. This is for grants to regional partners to provide mentoring supports for new teachers, training, technical assistance, and networks of practices. Grants to districts to fund teacher of record mentorships to tier one special education teachers. And then there's contracts with national content experts and research collaboratives to develop Minnesota's induction model. And this is on budget book, page 71. Subdivision 13 is on line 61.17. This is for reimbursements for teacher licensing and exam fees. This is one time at about $1.4 million. And this is on budget book, page 69. And then I'm not going to go into detail on the next section, which is appropriations to the Professional Educator and Licensing Standard Board. This is carried in our budget bill, but these are not associated with the Department of Education. And Madam Chair, committee members, that concludes Article 3. Article 4 is special education. The sections 1 and 2 and 4 through 6, which it starts on line 63.21, section 1, section 2 is 64.10, and then section 4 starts on 68.13. These are all associated with the proposal to extend special instruction and services for students with a disability until age 22, and this would be consistent with practices under federal law. This proposal results in additional special education costs because students remain eligible for services up to a year longer than they would under current law. We believe that this is required to be compliant with federal law and provide the services that students deserve. And this would come at a cost of $9.675 million in the first biennium and $10.226 million in the second biennium. And this is on budget book page 127. Tucked into the middle of those sections is section 3, which starts on page 64, line 1.9. This is associated with adding students placed in foster care to the cost of transportation for children with disabilities. This is at a cost of $540,000 in the first biennium and $1.24 million in the second biennium, and this is on page budget book page 150. Section jumping to Article 4, Section 7. This is on page 71.10, and this is associated with the special education cross subsidy proposal. This increases special education cross subsidy reduction aid to reduce the state total cross-subsidy per average daily membership, or ADM, by 50%. This is accomplished by increasing the cross-subsidy reduction aid up to that amount in fiscal 24 and later years. And this would be $722 million in the first biennium and $840 million in the second biennium. I'm not sure I mentioned the line number, 71.10. And the budget book page number would be 16. Section 8, which starts on line 71.17.
Mr. Rooney, would you go back and tell us what that budget number page was again?
Yes, Madam Chair, that budget book page number was page 16. Madam Chair, committee members, section 8 is related to the proposal for special education separate sites and programs. This is on line 71.17, budget book page 125. This is additional state funding to special education separate site and programs. So it's funding to provide additional services that students with disabilities with the highest needs require and which are not sufficiently met with state and federal special education funds, which is basically special education settings four and higher. This is at a cost of $9.46 million in the first biennium and $10.94 million in the second biennium. Section 9 starts on line 72.4. This is on budget book page 129. This is related to the specific learning disability rules. This updates the policy and state rule to remove the option for discrepancy route to eligibility, along with other language changes to update and align with other state and federal language, as well as supporting districts to implement the rule changes. Minnesota policy would then be aligned to current and evolving evidence-based practices in identification. Funds would be needed to operationalize changes to existing criteria and provide training, guidance, and evaluation on those policy changes once implemented. And this would be at about $1.14 million per biennium, and that's on budget book page 129. And for the final section of this article, this is appropriations to MDE. I've already noted the proposal amounts or the proposal amounts earlier in the article, so I won't cover any of the costs here in this section. And with that, Madam Chair, that covers Article 4, and I will hand it off to my colleague, Ms. Erickson, for Article 5.
Thank you very much, Mr. Uni, and Ms. Erickson, you may begin.
Thank you. Article 5 is the facilities article, and that starts on page 74, line 12. We have three areas that we wanted to highlight in the governor's proposal. Section 1 proposes a facilities improvement aid for districts not eligible for the current alternative facilities aid qualifications for large school districts. This proposal would be an allocation amount per year for 4 years. It would be an amount per district. Districts may reserve an amount up to $1 million over the term if they want to save for projects into the future or can spend those per year. Also, it would use the current long-term facilities maintenance uses, but would not be a part of the specific long-term facilities maintenance program. So this would be a separate aid for school districts that would not have to follow that. This amount would be for approximately $66.4 million in the first biennium and an additional $79.7 million in the second biennium. In addition, Article 1 also expands some eligibility for projects under LTFM, the Long-Term Facilities Maintenance Program. It expands some of the health and safety projects that can be utilized for projects over $100,000. And then also adds three deferred maintenance categories, which would include roofs, sidewalk replacement, and parking lot replacement as projects that could be approved through the LTFM program over $100,000 with board approval. Section 2 discusses just a change to create an alignment with review and comment processes for those projects that are funded through the Achievement and Integration Lease Program. So this just creates some consistency in projects that need to go through the MDE's review and comment process so that that keeps in alignment with our other projects and other lease levy requirements. And then under appropriation section 3, we just want to highlight a new proposal, which is the Building and Cybersecurity Grant Program. This would be a one-time grant for $50 million. This is similar to a grant program that was in 2018 for $25 million. This would provide grants for districts, charter schools, and other educational entities on a first-come, first-served basis. This would be related to violence prevention, facility security in qualifying school buildings, and cyber liability costs related to cyber liability insurance costs. And that is on budget book page 155. And I will turn it back over to my colleague Adosh.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Mr. Uni, you may begin.
Madam Chair, committee members, I am now starting Article 6, Section 1, which is on line 78.14. This is the Nutrition and Libraries article. The first two sections relate to the Universal Meals with Community Eligibility Provision proposal. This provides free breakfast and lunch to students attending any registered certified Minnesota school by participating in the National School Lunch Program and School Breakfast Program. This funding will be used on school meals for Minnesota students as well as administration costs for the Department of Education. There's also another proposal that's tucked in here, and I'll discuss that after I just cover the costs here. This is $388.8 million in the first biennium and about $424 million in the second biennium for the Universal Meals proposal. That's on budget book page 20. And then there's a small proposal, section Section 2 contains a proposal that also adds students receiving early childhood special education services. It makes them eligible for free breakfast, and that's at about $300,000 per biennium. This was the oversight in the drafting, I think, from several years ago in statute, and so we're trying to correct that. And that's on budget book page 121. Section 3 to Section 5. Section 3 starts on page 83, line 1.18, and this is modifying the funding formula for regional library basis system support. This is additional funding provided to ensure entities are held harmless. The first biennium is funded at $3.8 million, and the second biennium is funded at $4 million, and this is on budget book page 135. And then Section 6 are the appropriations for this article, and there are no new proposals that I haven't already covered for the cost for in that section. And Madam Chair, that concludes Article 6. Madam Chair, committee members, Article 7 is early childhood. Section 1 starts on line 86.16, and this is related to Head Start. This is a Head Start set of tribal Head Start set aside and expanded use of funds. We're proposing 10.72% of the total Head Start appropriation to be designated to tribal Head Start programs. And then state funds in general for Head Start programs could be used to cover costs associated with program operations or infrastructure. And you can find this on budget book page 85, and this is a no-cost proposal. Section 2 starts on line 87.26. This is related to public pre-kindergarten programs. This section clarifies that eligible four-year-olds may enroll in public pre-kindergarten programs, and this is on budget book page 23, and this is under the targeted mixed delivery early learning model proposal. Section 3 begins on line 88.16. This is related to the targeted mixed delivery early learning model, again on budget page 23, budget book page 23. This section sets the minimum and maximum hours of instruction for a public pre-kindergarten student to receive, which would be between 425 and 850 hours. Section 4 starts on line 89.1, and this is related to early childhood screening aid. This section increases the per pupil amount of developmental screening aid by age group. This is at funded at $2.13 million in the first biennium and $2.15 million in the second biennium, and this is on budget book page 118. Section 5 is the core language, starts some of the core language around the targeted mixed delivery early learning model proposal. Again, budget book page 23. This is on line 89.18. This funds full-day state-funded pre-kindergarten for the most underserved, so it's a targeted program. Most underserved four-year-old children using a mixed delivery model. The mixed delivery model is comprised of eligible providers who are school-based, Head Start, and community-based license center and family child care programs. This would be funded at $50.546 million in the first biennium, and then $434.23 million in the second biennium. The difference there is that the targeted mixed delivery program doesn't start in full until the second biennium. The first biennium covers continuation of the to-be-expiring current 4,000 voluntary pre-kindergarten seats that we've been funding on a two-year basis since 2016. Section 6, also associated with the targeted mixed delivery early learning model, starts on line 89.27. This section outlines program and provider requirements for the program, including assessment of a child's progress towards early learning standards, provision of comprehensive program content, hours of instruction, comparable staff salaries, requirements for a lead teacher, and staff-to-child ratios based on setting. And again, this is on budget book page 23. Section 7, which starts on line 91.27, again associated with the targeted mixed delivery early learning model. This section outlines the requirements of a mixed delivery local program plan for participating providers with a focus on coordination among community providers of pre-kindergarten programs, estimates of children to be served, recruitment plans, professional development coordination, and comparable salary planning. Section 8 starts on line 93.1. This section outlines funding for each type of eligible program under the targeted mixed delivery program, as well as administrative funds. Districts and charters are funded based on eligible pupils enrolled. Head Start, child care centers, and family-based providers are funded at $11,200 for the maximum amount of instruction hours of instruction per pupil in fiscal 26 and 27. In fiscal year 28 and later is the ratio of $11,200 and a statutory formula allowance. Again, this is also all contained in budget book page 23. Continuing in the same proposal on the budget book, section 9 on 93.19 outlines student eligibility to participate in the targeted mixed delivery program. Section 10, which begins on line 94.19. This, as I mentioned before, keeps the 4,000 voluntary pre-kindergarten seats from expiring in the next biennium until the mixed delivery model is implemented. Section 11 outlines the financial reporting requirements for the targeted mixed delivery program for providers, and that's on line 95.1. Section 12 starts on line 95.9. A different proposal than the targeted mixed delivery early learning model. This expands early learning scholarship eligibility from birth to 2 years old. And this proposal is on budget book page 29. Again, section 12 starts at line 95.9. Section 13 begins on line 96.11. This is also associated with the Early Learning Scholarships Expansion Proposal on budget book page 29. This section provides additional administrative funding for Early Learning Scholarship Program and provides the funds that funds transferred to the Special Revenue Account may be used for family outreach and distribution of the scholarships. Section 14 is associated with two proposals. First, the Targeted Mixed Delivery Early Learning Model. And this section clarifies, section 14, my apologies, starts on line 96.22. Again, the targeted mixed delivery program is on budget book page 23. This clarifies how to determine pupil units for public pre-kindergarten programs. And then it also includes the proposal around a technical funding correction for average daily membership for kindergarten students with a disability. That's on budget book page 123. And that comes at a cost of $158,000 in the first biennium and $166,000 in the second biennium. Section 15, starting on line 98.4, strikes a line of statute relating to calculating compensation revenue based on voluntary pre-kindergarten numbers, which would not be applicable when the full pre-kindergarten program is established. 16, associated with the same program, makes clear, and that's on line 99.8, makes clear that public pre-kindergarten pupils may not be included in declining enrollment calculations the first year of the program. And then section 17, are the appropriations to MDE, subdivision 3, which is on line 99.27, is the early learning scholarships program. And that's ongoing funding, and that is $321 million my apologies, I don't believe the numbers here are correct. Bear with me, Madam Chair. The increased amount is $90 million per year, $180 million per biennium increase to the program. Subdivision 13, which is on page 102, line 1, that's just related to the Head Start Center and Family Chair pre-kindergarten funding administration. Subdivision 14 is the pre-kindergarten planning. That is at $10.4 million, and that's on line 102.9. That's $10.4 million in the first biennium and $8.9 million in the second biennium. Section 18 is just a repealer. That's on line 102.17. That repeals the sections from the current voluntary pre-kindergarten statutes that are being replaced with the mixed delivery, targeted mixed delivery program. Madam Chair, that completes Article 7 on early childhood. Article 8 is covering community education. Section 1 is the, and that's on line 102.22. That is the after-school community learning grant program proposal at $45 million one time. The funding will provide grants that connect schools and communities so that they can offer after-school programs that meet the needs of students and their families. Technical changes are made to the programmatic language, and that's on budget book page 132. Section 2 starts on line 104.18, and this is adding a greater than 1 factor to the adult basic education growth formula that clarifies that ABE, adult basic education aid, cannot be lower in a future year. This is no cost. We're carrying no cost for this proposal. This is budget book page 114. Section 3, also associated with adults of basic education, that starts on line 105.5. This increases the contact hour allowance for ABE aid from $22 to $30, and this is on budget book page 112. Section 4, this is funding for the, and this is on line 105.19. This is for paid high school equivalency tests. This provides that the commissioner must pay 100% of the full battery cost from fiscal year 23 to 27, and this would be, but subject to availability of funds. This is $490,000 allocation. This is on budget book page 116. The appropriations to MDE are in section 5, which starts at the top of page 106. Subdivision 9 covers the high school equivalency test, which I just covered, and then subdivision 10 covers the after-school community learning grants proposal. And then, Madam Chair, that completes Article 8. The final article, I believe, is on state agencies. We only have a couple pages left here, and then we'll wrap up. Article 9, state agencies, section 1 and 2 cover, which starts on 108.3, section 1, and then section 2 starts on 108.9. This adds race and ethnicity data to data collected for purposes of the Minnesota State High School League Athletics. This is $180,000 one time allocated for this. This is on budget book page 175. Section 3, starting on line 108.27, requires the use of reasonable force to be reported to MDE for all students. This is at a cost of $47,000. Section 4, on line 109.13, strikes a reference to exclusion for rent for land and living residences from State Academy's financial statute. Section 5, which starts on line 109.2, would establish an office of inspector general at the department. This office will be authorized to detect and prevent fraud, waste, and abuse in programs. This is on budget book page 33. And this comes with allocation of $4 million per biennium. Section six, which starts on line 110.8, provides fiscal 23 funding to implement universal meals and cancels $1.5 million for legal fees. And then section 7, which starts on line 111.14, is the appropriations to MDE. I'm just gonna cover a couple of the new items that we're carrying in here. The legal fees amount is on line 111.29. This is a one-time allocation of $7.5 million. The EDFI data collection system and reporting, pardon me, the legal fees item is on page 188. Of the budget book. EDFI data collection is on line 112.1. This is also in budget book page 165. That's at $3.2 million in the first biennium and $4.7 million in the second biennium. Funding for IT resources at the department, that starts on line 112.4, and that's page 162 of the budget book. That's at $5.1 million in the first biennium and $9.8 million in the second biennium. Funding for the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center at the department, that would be at $4 million per biennium to cover activities and staffing that are currently funded through federal ARP dollars that are going to expire in the coming year, in the coming years. That's on page 181 of the budget book and on line 112.13 of the bill. Line 112.14 is audit and internal control resources at the department at $1.6 million per biennium. And the final amount under this article for what I'm covering today is to maintain current service levels at MDE on line 112.15, and that's on page 184 of the budget book, and that's at $9.5 million in the first biennium and $9.98 million in the second biennium. And Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the governor's budget bill.
Well, I think we can all take a deep breath. That was very comprehensive and very, a little bit overwhelming as well. Members, does anybody have any questions right off the bat? Senator Swadzinski.
Yeah, why are there no questions? Am I missing something? I have a couple. On page 57 of the bill, the paid student teaching formula, will that be retroactive to 1983? Just intellectually curious. No response needed. But my question, I think I know the answer, but just to clarify, I see a lot of the word grants often in this bill. Every year there's a lot of word grants. And are we being, you guys, are we being, is there knowledge, is there a process that there are some school districts that are really adept at finding grants and writing grants because they have the resources necessary to have people that are on the outlook for that. And then there's districts that are usually much smaller that just don't have those types of resources. Is somebody at the department cognizant of that issue so that that can be taken into consideration when applying for grants? Which, like I said, I must be in here a dozen times. So thank you, Mr. Ooney.
Mr. Ooney.
Madam Chair, committee members, Senator Swadzinski, that is a great question, and one that we have received and concerns that we've received from districts that don't necessarily have dedicated grant managers, smaller districts. We've also received that from some community organizations that are new to this space that don't necessarily have the history or capacity in terms of grant making our grant writers to compete with larger organizations that are experienced in that space. And so we've taken a hard look at how not only can we increase access for participation in this process in a more equitable manner based on resources that districts and community partners have, while also taking our grant making processes very seriously and looking at the suggestions from the OLA report. And so one of the things that you'll see in this budget bill is an ask for resources to be able to engage in higher level grant management and grant access services in each grant program, as well as overall resourcing at the department to be able to make sure that we're resourced to provide that technical assistance and guidance to applicants. But Senator Swierczynski, I think we'd be happy to have the team come meet with you to talk a little bit more in detail about how we're trying, the ways that we're looking at helping more districts who may not feel as they're successful in this process have better access to these programs.
Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Swierczynski, for bringing that up, because I was going to start hammering on the grants here pretty soon, because my districts, without exception, have expressed that they feel like they're at a disadvantage in receiving the grants. So I guess you're an honorary Iron Ranger today, Senator. So line of questioning, I guess we'll start with, so the general education aid, it looks like, will increase to just about a little over $8 billion in 2024, will increase with, and that's with the 4%, will increase to $8.173 billion the following year. I'm curious, in regards to all of these grants, if they were added all up, do you have a spreadsheet that would indicate how much money we're sending to school districts in the form of grants versus how much we're sending just on the formula?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Senator Farnsworth, don't have that information on hand, but we can certainly do the calculations of the budget to break down those numbers for you.
Mr. Farnsworth, or Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
May I just ask one question in connection to that?
Yep.
And Mr. Uni, would you also let us know how many of those grants, or which grants, are one-time only? Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the point that I was getting at, when we get that number, I would be curious to know, and maybe take out the one-time only grants versus the ongoing grants, or, you know, figure something out. But I would be curious to know, if we were to take those funds and extrapolate that across school districts, how much would that increase the amount that goes onto the formula? Because, of course, my position is that we should just put money on the formula. Most grants, unless the grants are, you know, distributed to every school district, should probably just be funds that would go on the formula. So that was what I was getting at, is how much that would increase the formula that every school, because that's what I'm hearing from teachers, from superintendents, from school boards. They're like, we just want an increase in the formula without any other strings attached and without having to, you know, jump through hoops to get that extra funding. So that would be helpful to know.
Mr. Uni?
Madam Chair, Senator Farnsworth and committee members, no, the team will take a look at the numbers and be able to get those breakdowns. I think those are good questions to ask about how that all breaks down. I think we're taking a multifaceted, multi-pronged approach, rather than just funding to the general education formula, funding to the cross subsidies to meet the diverse needs of our students, families, schools, and communities. This is all identified under the Due North Education Plan that's looking at creating more welcoming and teaching learning environment consistently across the state. And we're looking at the lack of access to all these programs. So that's why we've got funding programs for providing more student support personnel in districts and charters, where we know we have some of the worst counselor to student ratios in the country. Looking at providing more access to rigorous coursework opportunities across the state. Looking at access to more targeted pre-kindergarten opportunities for our four-year-olds across the state, looking at access for more support for our younger children with early childhood scholarships. And so we know that all our schools have been under-resourced for decades, and the governor is putting forward a large amount for the general education formula, for special education cross-subsidy, for the EL cross-subsidy, target those major building blocks of 21st century education funding. But we also know that in this day and age, our students have varied and diverse needs, and we are asking the legislature to come along with us around targeting some of those needs with targeted resources. And so that's kind of the explanation around why you're seeing a varied approach here, rather than just more money on the formula. But back to your question, Senator Farnsworth, I think you asked good questions about what that breakdown is, and the staff will work on being able to pull those numbers together.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Any follow-ups, Senator?
No, Madam Chair. Do you want me to let other people have opportunities before I return to other questions that I have, just in case we run out of time?
Sure. Senator Rarick will take a spin, and then we'll come back to you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that. I just wanted to make a comment on this subject as well. One of the things that I want to point out, every time we look at a grant that's in here, there's 5% can be used for administration, and that's for the agency. What is not included in that is it would be administration for each school to have to go through all that paperwork. When we put money on the formula or some of these other direct aid programs, we're not having that administrative cost. And I think that's something we should be looking at very closely so that most of our dollars can actually be going into our schools to support students. You know, one of the things I've heard repeatedly with inflation high, we should not be growing administration. And I see a lot of that with grants. So I would hope we'll be considering that. One question I do have real quick is, so we have $6.9 billion in increased funding in the proposal. How much of that is one-time versus ongoing spending?
We'll just give them a minute to formulate that.
Madam Chair, Senator Rarick, I'm looking over at the finance team. I think we'll be able to pull those numbers for you. If not in committee, we'll get those to you shortly.
I have a question. I know that in the funds that we provide to our school districts, there is an expectation that school districts will set aside certain amount of dollars to reduce class sizes. And I'm wondering if any of that is addressed in this bill. I know we went through it pretty quickly. But has there been any discussion, or is there anything in the bill that's either raises the amount or perhaps addresses the amount that school districts should be putting aside for classroom reduction?
Madam Chair, committee members, there aren't specific targeted set-asides under the general education formula or some of the bigger amounts specific to class size reduction, maybe as we've seen proposed in some of the other bills in front of committee. However, two of the proposals come to mind that touch upon ratios. The funding for student support personnel goes directly to the core concept of we have a very bad counselor to student ratio or student support personnel to student ratio. And so funding not only for dedicated support personnel, but hopefully incentivize more investments in that space, and districts will go towards that. Additionally, there are student to child ratios in the targeted mixed delivery program. I think it's 20-1, I think, in some of the classes. So that there are specific thresholds set in that proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Oney. Anybody else? Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Oney. Fully funding post-secondary. So I just want to make sure I'm clear on that. So so I hear from principals versus, you know, local colleges that there's sort of this headbutting, because when post-secondary students go to the college, then the schools lose some of that funding. So is that what, I'm assuming that that's what this is addressing, the fully funding post-secondary, to make sure that our high schools aren't losing out on that funding because students are going over to the colleges?
Mr. Oney.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the purpose, I'll create a landing pad if someone wants to phone a friend possibly, but the purpose of this is to fund at 88% of what the cost would be for students, but I have Chief of Staff Graff here to provide some further detail.
Madam Chair, Senator, thank you for the question. You are right. So this would be an opportunity for us to be able to essentially hold districts harmless and make sure that they are still receiving the ADM for students that the full ADM for students that participate in post-secondary enrollment options. It also provides the opportunity as they receive those full resources to really lean into things like transportation for removing barriers for students to participate in PSEO, right? So transportation services, language, you know, making sure there's language access and that we're translating materials for families to be able to really understand the opportunities around PSEO counseling services, right? And academic counseling for students as they explore what they might want to tap into in PSEO, right? And so receiving the full ADM and then also being able to provide those robust supports that we know students need as they access post-secondary enrollment options. But under this, it really also is focused on making sure that there is that partnership between post-secondary and high school, that money is not the challenge, that districts can open those doors for students, still receive those resources, and still have that level of responsibility to support students, create access, and remove barriers for students and families.
Thank you, Ms. Graff. Follow-up, Senator Farnsworth?
No, Madam Chair, I'll wait and let other people ask questions before I ask my next one.
I think you're up. Oh, appears that Senator Rarick maybe has a question. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another particular line item that is of interest here is in the Office of the Inspector General that is going to be looking into waste and fraud. And I see we have $4 million per year going to that. And if we're spending $4 million a year, what is the assurance that that is going to actually end fraud? Or if something is caught, what are the ramifications? What is going to be our payback for that $4 million investment every year?
Madam Chair, Senator Rarick, that's a great question. Thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit more about this really important proposal. And here I have Assistant Commissioner Cordy to answer some questions on that.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Rarick, first of all, Darren Cordy for the record, Assistant Commissioner at MDE. It's hard to say what I guess the payback would be or to quantify that, but certainly we know that we've had some experience recently that without the ability for us to conduct investigations, have insight into those investigations, and be able to use the information garnered from those investigations to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse, that we're really at a disadvantage, and that we're essentially relying on other state agencies, other federal partners to conduct those investigations on our behalf. When that happens, it takes a lot of time. We don't have a lot of visibility into it. And we are confident that by having this additional tool in our toolbox at MDE in order to conduct these investigations ourselves, have those insights into it, work more in partnership with the investigators in state and local law enforcement and federal law enforcement, that we will be able to save the state money. Again, I can't quantify how much it's going to be. We don't know that in the future, but that is the goal of this proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I appreciate that we're going to be looking at waste, fraud, and abuse. I sometimes wonder if it isn't better that it comes from an outside source that has a little bit different angle than looking from within. So hoping to have some more conversations around that. I think all of us, we hate to see when state dollars are, and we find out that they went to things we weren't expecting or wanting them to go towards. I just want to make sure that as we do that investigation, we're doing it with open minds and maybe not trying to protect certain people within an agency. An outside agency can maybe sometimes do that a little bit better. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? We're going to give it about 5 more minutes, and then we're going to move on to Pelsby. Oh, did you have a response?
Madam Chair and Senator Rarick, I just it's not generally spelled out in the bill this way, but as it's structured and as it's structured in other agencies, the Office of the Inspector General is independent from leadership within the agency. So there would be some level of separation there that would allow some independence and accountability. But your point is well taken, that there is a benefit to having investigations happen through a third party. Just in our experience, it really hinders our ability to act quickly when we have to rely on outside folks.
Thank you. Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Alternatives to exclusionary discipline, the $5 million per year from 2024 to 2025, is that intended to address, so in the policy bill, there's the plan to prevent suspensions of students at a certain age level. So is that section intended to help with training for that? And then I'll sort of have a follow-up comment after you answer that.
Mr. Ooney.
Madam Chair, Senator Farnsworth, yes, that's exactly what it is. And even more, the package around alternatives to exclusionary discipline, that does, one of the bigger features is the suspension of kindergarten through third grade, expanding on the current prohibition for pre-kindergarten students to be able to implement that with fidelity. But also there's a range of other policy proposals around other non-exclusionary discipline proposals or practices that happen maybe before the consideration of dismissal, where we're trying to de-escalate a situation with a student maybe in the hallway, in the classroom. Additionally, when we're working with students who may end up being expelled or excluded, keeping them in contact with the school community by checking in with them on a quarterly basis and helping fill out ultimately levels of paperwork to be able to provide information about interventions that could help the student at their next school. So these funds would help schools and practitioners be able to implement all of those policies, not just around suspensions.
And follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm glad to hear that. So we have all of these different programs that are aimed at encouraging people to go into teaching. And I think these are good things. We have shortages. I mean, probably half of all of the meetings that I have in my office, there's some group or another saying, we have a shortage. Can you help us attract workers? And so I understand that's a need. But the number one thing when I talk to teachers, when they're thinking about getting out of the profession, or when they're saying, you got to get us early retirement back because I can't do this for another 15 years, it's discipline. And so I'm hesitant. So I like this. I like coming up with the alternatives because I'm a special ed teacher. I did EBD. I mean, I still have scars on my shins from a third grade student that used to wear his rain boots to school in winter because he knew it would make me bleed when he kicked me with those boots. But that was my job, and I get that. I lost my train of thought here, thinking back to my early years of teaching. But most teachers don't sign up for that. You know, I have a master's degree in emotional behavior disorders. Most teachers want to teach, and they understand that the salary isn't going to be the best. You know, they understand that the workload is probably going to be more. But what they don't understand is why they have to have students or parents swear at them or threaten them or get physically violent with them. And so I think we need to be cautious when we just say, let's get rid of, you know, you can't suspend students of this age. That really kind of ties our hands behind our back. I had a principal call me 2 days ago just panicking. Are we really going to get rid of this? Because I have a teacher that was attacked by a student, scratched, and now has a staph infection. And this isn't the first time that teacher has had a staph infection from being scratched by students. So I think with this, you know, this is good to work on teaching people how to deal with discipline, but we also can't, you know, tie our administrators' hands behind their back. We have to allow them, you know, to use whatever tool they can. Otherwise, all of these programs to try and encourage people to be teachers aren't going to work because nobody's going to. I mean, if you're a 11th or 12th grade student sitting in a classroom and you see kids swearing at the teacher and getting away with it, why would you ever consider going into education? So I think that we have to look at the long-term consequences of that, especially in regards to teacher morale and teacher longevity. So I'll stop. I think you've answered most of my other questions that I had on here, so thank you.
Response, Mr. Uni?
Madam Chair, and Senator Farnsworth, thank you for sharing that. I think this is an important conversation that we've also had with the chairs around. This is a really difficult issue to handle, and it's not just about the administrators and the challenges that they face to create a more welcoming and welcoming teaching and learning environment, but also for the educators who are in the classroom and ultimately teacher morale. We've come forward with our policy proposal package 4 or 5 years, and just in the past few years, for lack of better phrasing, we've tried to put money where our mouth is and asking for implementation supports for districts, because we've been hearing exactly what you're talking about. I think in 2021, we got some initial funding from the legislature to implement some of these grants, and then we've also used some federal ARP funds to help implement this. And now we're coming forward for ongoing funding to implement these practices, because it is really important for districts, for administrators, for classroom teachers to be able to have the professional development, the training, and the supports to be able to implement these proposals to keep kids in the learning environment in the safest manner. One of the things that we are trying to engage in a more rigorous fashion with this round of proposals is convening sessions with principals, convening sessions with classroom educators to be able to hear back from them on the proposal package and other ideas that they feel would be best supportive of them. So we're trying to engage in this and hear exactly what you're talking about, Senator, about this isn't just, it's a multifaceted, multi-viewed, multi-pronged approach, and we need to take account of all viewpoints in this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Oni, for responding. Any other burning questions? All right. Well, with that, I would like to thank Mr. Uni and Ms. Graff and Ms. Erickson for all of your information on this. And members, if you do have further questions, you can either share them with us and we'll try to find those answers for you, or you can reach out to these folks and get response to your question. I think we do have a little bit of time and would invite our Pelsby folks to come up and present. Welcome to our committee this morning. If you'd like to state your full name and then go ahead and share what you've got to share.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Elena Bailey. I am the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. And I don't know that we have a lot to share, but we do have, we are included in the governor's budget proposal. If you're looking at the bill on page 113, there is an addition there that's explained in the budget book, but that would allow for 3 additional staff positions for Pelsby. So you've heard me come and testify before, many of you all at the policy committee, around some of the work that Pelsby's doing and attempting to expand, particularly around alternative pathways and portfolio. So one of those 3 positions would be dedicated specifically towards the licensure via portfolio pathway. And the other ones would help us expand our work in licensing and data and things like that. So short and brief, which I love being able to give a very short presentation in contrast to my colleagues over at MDE. But I'm happy to answer questions.
Thanks for that quick little review. Anybody have any questions for us? And again, that's on page 113, the appropriation for Professional Educator Licensing and Standard Board. Well, I guess that's it. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. All right, any other questions? Well, members, I would just like to remind you to please save this packet in your save folder or take it back to your office, but we will not be printing it again. And review it. I would suggest reviewing it. Maybe we'll have a little quiz next time we meet. I don't know. And if you have further questions that you want to either ask me or interests or in things that you want to point out to me as we start looking at putting our own budget together, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. This evening, we will have another committee hearing with a number of bills starting at 5:30, 6 o'clock. So I am sorry to do that to you, but look forward to seeing your faces at 6 p.m. tonight. And with that, we are adjourned.